great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we'll be talking pedal boards, the do's and the don'ts. We have brought in Ron Moreno, Josh Smith, and Terry Bardul. Ron is a pedal board designer, Terry builds custom switches and mounts for pedal boards, and Josh will be demonstrating the various pedal boards we have here in studio. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great one for you tonight. Scott, how you doing?
I am doing good. I just want to let our listeners know that you may have seen on our Facebook site we had some issues with the show from last week where it caused some issues for such huge popularity. It dropped our site down, but that is back up. The link is working, and actually I posted up the two videos from last week's show, so one with Richie Kotzen talking about vocal warm-ups, and then one with Billy Sheehan showing how he does all of his harmonics anywhere he wants on the bass and his different techniques.
And his infamous woof-woof sound.
Well, that and the bending the neck.
Yeah, the bending the neck was with the GoPro camera. You can see it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So, you can go to my YouTube channel. It's Selenium, and you can check that out. Check those videos out. And, and then I just want to let everyone know to stay tuned to our website because we'll have some cool giveaways coming up, one of which coming from Orange Amps.
Oh, cool. That'll be great. That sounds good. Okay, I want to get right into this because there's so much gear in here. You won't believe it. I'm like in heaven. There's two full pedal boards. There's a bunch of effects in here. I want to get to it. So we're going to go ahead and take a break with our sponsor, Sweetwater, and we'll be right back with the gang.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here, one of the many guitar freaks at Sweetwater, happy to support the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show. We're super happy today to support this great discussion on pedal boards and pedal accessories. Check out the tremendous gear we sell online at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. This week, the Flow welcomes the founder of Marino Sales, Rick Marino. Also joining the fray today is Terry Bardul. Terry's company, One Control, makes the killer crocodile tail loop switcher pedal and also iguanas and geckos and great pedal gear and accessories. Also, recording artist Josh Smith is here today. Sweetwater sells all the One Control items. Check it out online at sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts. Dig this week's Flow with Jeff and Scott and call us at 800-222-4700 to get the scoop on all the great guitar and pedal accessories. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle at Sweetwater saying, rock on with the Flow.
Hi, I'm Richard Kotzen from the Winery Dogs, and you are listening to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
We are back. Now, before I just introduce our guests, I want to tell you the story behind it. I first of all, I want to thank Joel Grant, who finished doing the Flowcaster, and I was at his store picking up the Flowcaster when I met Ron Moreno. He was there at the store, and we started talking, and he told me about that he does seminars and building pedal boards, and that's what he does. He helps people design their pedal boards, and this show came about because of Joel, so I want to thank him for that. Besides making my guitar amazing, it was great. But anyway, we got Ron Moreno in. And that's what he does. He also represents various companies to help, different equipment to help facilitate building your custom pedal. And then we have Terry Bardul, who with Stage Tricks Products, which represents One Control. They make devices and mounting systems, switching systems, and he'll get into all the different products that they make for your pedal board. And I wish I had known about you when I was building mine, because the switching system you have is pretty crazy. And also Josh Smith, a local musician around here. He's a recording artist. He's touring. He's doing all sorts of stuff. And he brought in his board that he uses on the road. So we're going to hear about designing the pedal board, how to go about that. And then we're also going to see somebody that's using one every day and why it's built the way it's built. So I think it's going to be a real exciting show. Gentlemen, just welcome. It's a pleasure to have you guys here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, Ron, go ahead and explain a little bit what you do, the kind of issues that you see, and let's just start with that, and then everybody chime in as needed.
Sure. Well, the concept for the pedal board clinics were basically two ideas. One was to bring professional utility pedal board products to the everyday consumer, where normally it was in the past available to professional musicians that were paying install guys to put their pedal board together. Mm-hmm. So basically what we do is at a pedal board clinic, quite honestly, it's more like pedal board 101. I'm not a designer against the other install guys by any means. I play bass and use these things in the past with, you know, project boxes. The second part of the concept is to bring in a new consumer to the stores so that we could do a consultation for a guy that can't afford maybe to have pay for his board to be done. And we give him tools that he can do it himself. So putting the wire together, mm-hmm. Putting the pedals together in order, the signal flow path, and, you know, getting his wish list together in terms of what everything he wanted on the board and how to utilize such a thing. So that was really the idea, and we're starting to do a few of them a little more each month or throughout the year. So it's been, you know, quite good.
Yeah, no, I think it's great because my pedal board's trial and error. I mean, yeah. My first one, I put a shag carpet on a piece of wood and put four pedals together and just chained them together, no buffering or nothing, and I get all sorts of radio frequencies. It was really, actually, I used it as part of the set because I'd get this weird stuff in there. And but anyway, yeah, it's. I wish I had known a lot about it, and I think it's great that you're a player too, because that really, like we have Josh here, it's really important. Your needs become very specific depending on your gig. And Josh playing sessions for other people back besides his own stuff, he's got to have different setups. And we were talking earlier in the show about presets. He's got presets that he needs to download it fast, get it set up for each gig that he does.
You shouldn't have to worry about what the pedals are doing or how to turn them on. It should be about the music first, and the pedal should be surrounded by the concept of what you guys are doing musically. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I have a fusion trio, and the guitar player was starting to put sounds together for the trio. But in the trio, he's trying to do a keyboard part, he's doing a solo, he's doing a comp thing. He's trying to wear a lot of hats because there are only three guys. And in the beginning of the rehearsals, he was having a tough time playing the parts because the parts were really difficult, let alone turning two or three pedals on to get a certain sound at a section of the song. So once I got him one of the loop controller, the five, and we put two or three pedals on one loop and was able to access it at one time, the guitar part was less of an issue because he wasn't thinking about that. He played the part, he hit the button, the sound went on, and it was mm-hmm. we got to continue the session. So it should be integrated in terms of what you're doing musically, whether you're doing an experimental thing with your band or you're trying to replicate a sound with a tribute band. You should be able to program what you're trying to do. So it depends on the application of the player and what you're doing. But these tools help you achieve that. And mm-hmm. We're just there to kind of help the guy out, go, hey, we'll put them in order and tell me what you're doing. Bring your board and we'll take a look and see if we can help you with getting what you want done.
Now, before we get into where you position the pedals in order, because I think everybody wants to know what's the best way to do that, I'm going to throw a question out to all three of you. And it's kind of a see what you guys feel. Personally, I'm a person that likes pedals. I'm an analog guy, though I record and I use digital all the time. But I've seen like people like Alex Lifen in Rush. He's now doing all of his effects stuff on a laptop using virtual. Do you think virtual is going to take over, or do you think it's as its place, or you think it's not really, you're still going to want the pedals, or what do you, because you guys are all using stuff live, and I'm sure you've used, like, you know, the different virtual rigs that you can get on computer. I'm just curious what you guys think.
There's two issues. One, if you're doing fly dates and you're limited to what you can bring anymore, which everybody is, with freight and what the gig pays, right? You take out a tiny little board to the gig, or maybe it's on an iPad and the guy's accessing the sounds from an iPad and he's going right to the monitor. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be more of the future, but I think for right now, guys that like Josh and the best guys that you have in the industry playing right now, they're going to want, you know, analog or a mix of analog and digital right in front of them so they can access whatever they want, you know, locally.
Yeah.
So there's a couple different, you know, that you have to break that up into two sections, really.
Yeah. Alex Grossi, that plays with Quiet Riot, he mentioned that he brings a little pedal board and his guitars, a couple of guitars, and they get the amps there at the location, but because they can't afford to ship all that
stuff.
Yeah. And I think last week even Billy Sheehan mentioned that he's downsized what he uses and that at the venue they bring in the amps and they bring in all the stuff. So, yeah, that's a real issue. Do you think that the virtual stuff sounds as good, or do you?
It's getting there.
It's getting there.
I've heard plenty of stuff that's easily gigable, good enough to, you know, to play gigs on. And a lot of times, like he said, as much as we all want tone to be the number one factor, when you're flying four places in 6 days, it can't always be the number one factor. It's whatever fits in the overhead bin, whatever you can set up in 5 seconds if you're on a festival and you don't have a sound check. So I've never gigged with just an iPad or a laptop, but I'm certainly not beneath it, above it, I mean. And, I know plenty of guys who only bring Axe FX now to their gig and never have an amp anymore, you know, because it's just so easy.
But then you get several weeks ago, Andy from Samsung Technologies, he came in with these little hot tone pedals, and they're small. They're smaller than my mouse on my computer, and he had like six of them on this little guy that was like about a foot and a half pedal board, and it was a full complement of stuff. So it's interesting to see that kind of miniaturization too. Yep. It's an interesting.
I think that the difference is really about how accessible is it. You know, it's the controlling on the stage that seems to be an issue with a lot of multi effects units or those small little pedals. Even put two of those side by side, and you're going to engage two at the same time because they're so close together.
Right.
So it's great to save real estate on a pedal board, but it comes at a price. You need to wear pointed shoes to access them.
Yeah, I've actually had trouble with some of those little pedals because I got size 14 feet and step on them.
Yeah, and also too, to be, you know, like a group like Rush, a lot of his presets are controlled at the board by MIDI. They're sending the, he doesn't even deal with it, he just plays.
Well, there's the realization too that, you know, 99% of the audience cannot hear the difference between analog and digital, or, you know, or anything really. They just, you could play the song completely wrong and they wouldn't even know sometimes. Yeah. So, you know, if you're going to fly a date, you know, it's easy to go like, eh, they can't tell the difference. You're really playing it for yourself. It's you use the stuff that you use for your own feel, for your own,
absolutely,
you know, for yourself. So the digital part, if it fits, you know,
if
then
it fits,
fine.
Then yeah, use it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get into a little bit. Let's get your opinion from all you guys, the layout. You know, like there's a debate of, do you put the wah before the fuzz or after the fuzz? I've done it both, and it's definitely a different sound. You know, what about compressors? Kind of go through a general rundown that you would give in a seminar of how the pedals should generally be laid out.
Well, that typically, there's no wrong answer, of course, but typically the wah would be first, and then if you were using an overdrive and a fuzz, then you would go into an overdrive and a fuzz afterwards.
So you'd have the wah before like a compressor?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
And see, I do it different.
Yeah, I don't know. I understand.
And it's because, like you said, everybody is, there's no wrong answer. I like my wah both before and after dirt. So on my board, I have the wah located between, I have four dirt pedals. It's between all four. There's two in front of it and two in back. Because if I want a standard sound, I'll use the wah before a dirt pedal, get the Stevie Ray Vaughan sound or any kind of sound. But if I want the Hendrix sound, a lot of times I want the wah, you know, after the fuzz, You know, so it's really intense. So, mm-hmm. you know, I like to have both.
Now, on your pedal board, you don't, do you have a compressor on there, too?
I don't have a compressor on my pedal board. I only use compressors on sessions and when somebody asks me to. I'm not a big compressor guy.
Oh, okay. No, it's definitely its own sound. I've used the MXR because Carlton got that. I got a certain tonality and sustain out of it.
I like, if I use them, I have a vintage DBX rack unit so I can sound like Paul Jackson Jr. And that's the only compressor sound I like.
No, that's great. So, okay, as we can see, there's, you know, of course, ultimately, if it works for you, it's right.
Well, it's all theoretical, really. Mm-hmm. What is the signal flow? What is optimum? You know, your volume effects, which are your distortions and your overdrives and your fuzzes going into your envelopes and your modulations. Yeah. There's that, but that all goes away with how does it sound? Are you happy with it?
Well, yeah. Right. Everybody puts their modulations after the dirt. But if you want to sound like Hendrix, your Univibe has to be first, mm-hmm. you know? So it's everything's so different.
Now, with using a switching system like One Control that you have, where you have all of your pedals plugged in as like a loop, and then you assign it and program the sequence of them, is it really important to have true bypass since you're probably leaving it on all the time?
Well, true bypass is a little bit of a misunderstood thing.
Okay.
You know, the whole, you shouldn't, if you have everything true bypass and you run over 25 foot of cable total, your true bypass is actually going to give you worse sound than having a crappy buffered boss in that loop that has a buffer in it already. So that is not necessarily, it's not necessarily the end all and be all. True bypass is really something that guitar players as a whole started to believe in that was great.
Oh yeah.
I was doing quotation marks here.
Yeah, but there's also like everybody loves the old Arion chorus pedal that Landau uses. The bypass on that is so horrendous that it kills your tone if it's in your chain.
Right. So you have to, there's an example or a fuzz that might be susceptible to hum. You'd want it in a loop with the exception of when it's on. It's on.
But
when it's out of it, you want it out.
That's the best thing about the loop system. And honestly, when I first started using a loop system about 15 years ago, it was the first thing that just made me go, this is the greatest thing ever. Because I finally felt like I was plugged straight into my amp again.
Right.
And I could use any of my vintage pedals, and I had them in my Bradshaw rack, vintage Octavias and stuff in my rack that suck tone like crazy, and they're on, and they're not messing with my tone at all until I'm ready for them.
So with your pedal board, and I'll post some pictures of his pedal board that Josh is using, everything's on, right?
You don't Everything is on. Everything
just,
is in a loop.
You access it by the loop or the program.
Absolutely. So when I'm not using any pedals, it's literally like I go into my input jack, turns around, goes right back to the output jack, into the amp, like I'm not running through anything.
Right.
And that is its main function or feature. And why you would want such a thing
for the One Control?
Well, the loop interface,
right.
You know, that's its main purpose.
Yeah, without programmability and all that,
right?
That first off, it gets you not running through anything.
Yeah.
When you don't want to.
And that's when you talk to people and when you're doing the seminars, that's the basic approach. You leave everything on and then you turn it on. You assign it by the patching.
In my case, the OC5, it is simply just five loops. There is no program function. There's a tuner out for the muting, and that's it. So if there's a particular loop I wanted two effects on, I can put, in my case, I have the octaver, and then I have the pog for the octave above. And then I have the blender pedal in between those two guys so that I could blend a little more of one or the other. If mm-hmm. I'm doing a harmony with the guitar player, I can lean on maybe the octave up, but you'll still hear my bass. So that fundamental doesn't come out of the trio. You'll just hear it as an effect, as it should be. And then when we're not playing that part, you shut it off, and then you just hear my bass just as if it was plugged into the bass amp.
Now, and this one that you brought in is your bass rig, right?
Yeah.
Now, because it's not programmable, so your approach is basically each loop has a set of pedals set to do a certain sound.
Sure.
So you can just go to that one or another set or another set.
Yeah.
As opposed to what you're doing, Josh,
yeah.
where you have everything set up and you can program where you want it.
Well, mine is actually both, and I use it both ways. Most of the time, I use it as a glorified pedal board. I have a button that corresponds to every pedal on my pedal board, and I hit that button for that pedal. And, you know, if I'm jamming with somebody, if I'm at a session, it's normally what I'm doing. If I'm on a gig for somebody else and I'm playing songs, like say I'm on tour with, you know, with Rafael Sadiq, who I've worked for the last 5 years, we have a set that we've played. We have songs we play all the time. So I have sounds that correspond to those songs. So I flip over to preset mode, and then I have presets that, yes, when I hit one button, instead of just turning on the pedal that's assigned to that, it turns on whatever pedals I want for that song and sends MIDI to my Eventide and turns on that time delay that only matches that song and those things. Yeah, but it does both.
You want to mention also that in your H9 that you're able to take from the iPad for a different artist.
Absolutely. That's why I have the H9 on my board, is because I save my preset lists by what gig I'm playing on. So if it's my own gig with my songs, I have presets made for my songs. If it's Rafael Sadiq's gig, I have presets made for his songs. If it's Taylor Hicks' gig, I have presets made for his songs. Whoever's gig, I can make their presets, and it makes it super easy for me to just bring them over to my pedal board.
Yeah, and what he's mentioning is the Eventide H9, and it's basically got all the most of the sounds from his their time modulator, their delay unit, and all of that, and you can program sequences of those effects within it.
Yeah.
And he can do that. So even that little pedal by itself has, how I don't know how many effects you can program simultaneously. Do you know?
No, simultaneously it only does one.
Oh, it only does one.
So that's why guys are having multiple ones. It'll load up anything from the time factor, the mod factor, the pitch factor, the space, and it even has custom ones only for it that are things based off H3000 and the Eventide. It's incredibly powerful, and it'll run anything, but only one sound
one
at a time.
And because you have these different setups, if I'm correct, you have how many? You have three or four distortion devices on your
I have pedal? Four distortion devices.
So he has different ones set up for certain things, and then he can access them. Most people don't think about that, but more pedals, that gives you that kind of, because you can get pretty flexible.
One more thing to say about, you know, the straight up looper like Ron has on his board is that it also helps with your real estate on your pedal board, because normally you have to put your pedals in such a way where you can easily access them, but that usually means that your board has to be wider and etc. Now you can have a smaller board and the pedals can be, you know, literally just thrown on there, because you don't have to access them, because you use that loop switcher as a remote control for your pedal, really. You just and so it's all neatly here. Just so think of it as a loop switcher, you know, it makes it almost like you can I guess that's it. Just a remote access.
It allows him to, if you look at Ron's setup, his pedals are stacked up in the back. Now, standing up, you'd have to reach a little bit to get the top pedal if you were going to turn that on and off. With his little switcher that he has on the bottom, it's just like a toe tap.
Just boom, you're there.
And he doesn't have to move his foot that
much.
Well,
if you look at mine, I've got five pedals that have no lifts or anything, where I can't step on these comfortably, but I don't need to. They're on already. I'm turning them on here, and they don't have any extra thing that I need to switch with my foot. But whereas this pedal, my tremolo, which has two settings, this dirt pedal that has a boost, the Eventide has tap tempo, so it's down here on the bottom, those are easily reachable. So I have lifts on just those three pedals and the tuner. The other ones, I don't care. This one's so far away and flat, but it isn't, you know, I don't need to get to it.
Now, I noticed that you don't have a volume pedal or a wah pedal on there. You just put that separate?
So the wah, like I was saying, I like to have my wah strategically placed between dirts. So loop four on my one control, I leave empty, and it goes to this interface box, and I have a send and return there. So I plug my wah in off the board and put it there. But also I do that because, number one, it lets me put it between those dirts. And number two, on sessions, I can plug any extraneous pedal that I bring that I need for that session in that loop. Anything extra, anytime. A lot of times on a session, I'll plug a tape echo there because I'm plugging straight in, and that's the only sound anyways. It doesn't matter what loop it's in. I'm just using just the tape echo.
Yeah.
So it's a strategically placed
and
extra loop.
And you don't usually use a volume pedal when you put
Not live. I use them on sessions all the time. But if I do, I'll plug them in. You know, I'll plug it in that loop sometimes, or I'll just plug it in where the guitar, you know, in front where my guitar goes. It depends on where I need the volume pedal.
Yeah. So, I mean, with the wah, it's not too much of a hassle just to patch it for if you were going to play live.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually like, I'm weird like that, but I like having it off the board. I like setting it at a little angle. And when you put it on the board, it takes up so much space. And
That's
you can't
true.
Put it at an angle, it takes up even more space. So I like to sit it here like this. And, you know, and then sometimes, like today, I didn't bring it in because it's not important to demonstrate my wah pedal. But a lot of gigs, sometimes when I know I'm not going to use it, I don't even bring it. I don't plug it in. You know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, he has a lot of pedals in there, and it's pretty compact. It's not a big board at all.
And this is like 15 years of knowledge and different rigs boiled down into this. This is like my fifth rig over the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you know, I went from nice. Very big rack, like everybody had, Bradshaw mm-hmm. rack, to a very, very small pedal board in rebellion of that rack, to now, you know, meeting in the middle where I have programmability and presets and true bypass looping and all those things, but still on a small board that's under 50 pounds that I can check on a flight.
Yeah, right. No, we had Bradshaw on before, and he had mentioned that now they want small, carryable.
Oh, yeah.
He limits it under like 70 pounds
that's
at the
right.
max.
Yeah.
He builds them now smaller. I think the only guy that has a huge setup now is Tom Nordic, which is amazing. His system's amazing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like
that's
four racks.
Apartment for the past
yeah, that's,
you know,
yeah.
12
whole
years.
Living room yeah
but I mean that's true even Bob said that's really important. Now let me ask you guys, let's go around the table again too, how do you keep it clean? Not I mean obviously you're using distortion by but you know cabling, like for example, let me ask you here, if the Terry, how much cable is in there? Is that 25 feet
on the board itself?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is that a problem? Like we were talking about the buffer, and also too, when do you need to put a? I mean, when do you need to put a buffer amp? Or is
well, the kind of the rule of thumb is if you use anything between 20 and 25 foot of cabling, that means coming from your guitar to your pedal board, from your pedal board to the amp, then you get there pretty quick. You know, 12 foot one, 12
yeah.
foot back,
and then in between every pedal,
and then between every pedal. So if you add that up, you'll get quickly over 25 foot of cabling. And if you have that, then you're really going to start getting a lot of capacitance. And that is when you want to introduce a buffer in the loop, in your board, somewhere in your signal chain. Logically, it would be you go into your loop, into your buffer, into the rest. Some people say, oh, I don't like it in front of my fuzz. Well, then put it yeah. somewhere else. But again, that's placement. But anywhere in that loop, if you put it in, what it will do is it will restore your high-end sparkle, which is what you lose.
Yep.
And you know, and if you engage a buffer and you say, I don't hear a difference, then you don't need it. It's
okay.
pretty simple.
And where do you have a buffer on here?
I have an interestingly set up on here. See, I try to avoid buffers most of the time unless I need them. So my setup is, and the other thing about a switcher like this is, even though each pedal, there's tons of cabling on this board, each pedal has two cables of its own, I'm not running through all of them almost 90% of the time. I may
right.
be running through one.
Exactly.
So I'm not dealing with a ton of cable normally. So what I do is I have the interface box. I go in. There's no input buffers on my board. The one control has a great buffer in it. I don't use it either. I go straight through everything with no buffers, and then I go back to my interface box, which has two output buffers that drive the final lines to my two amps. And that's,
oh, so your buffer is totally after all.
Totally after everything. And I'm very anal about it. I sat with Mason and the guy who designed my pedal board, and we tuned these buffers by choosing different chips and trying them. And I have this bypass switch here that when I click this switch, it's literally like I went into that interface box with my guitar and it turned around and went back in. It bypasses the entire board. And I can, if I leave no loops on the one control, and I hit back and forth, it's the sound of going through the one control and everything, or going straight to the amp. And we tuned it till it was absolutely identical
mm-hmm.
and felt exactly the same, now, which is the biggest thing.
Now, Ron, on yours, how do you have any buffer amps on yours?
I don't. I use a short cable in front and after. However, the little blender pedal there that you see actually has a buffer capability, a switch on the very bottom half of it. So if I feel I need it, then I can turn it on depending on if I'm hearing a difference. But otherwise, I leave it off because I'm running a short amount of cable.
Well, it seems to me the trick is the switching pedal saves you the distance.
Absolutely.
In the old days, like in my old first little pedal board, it went run in series.
Mm-hmm.
So you were running a lot of stuff. So
and you weren't using patch cables, so you got the really long ones in between too, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, they didn't make foot-long ones back then.
When I first got my Bradshaw rig 15 years ago, it was like when I plugged in, I couldn't believe it. I kept unplugging out of the Bradshaw and then plugging straight into my vintage Super Reverb, and I'd be like, man, this sounds like it's exactly the same. This is, I've been, my tone has been suffering this much going through all those pedals in a row, and it was a night and day moment for sure.
Now, do you guys have any, and you're using a lot of distortion devices. Is mm-hmm. there anything else that you do to keep the system in generally clean? Do you have a lot of RF interference? Do you have a...
No, none. I've never had any with this board. You know, at this point, there's nothing vintage on this board other than that Phase 45, and it's in a loop. But the stuff is made so well these days that I haven't had those kind of issues in a long, long time.
What? No. Can you go through and tell people what you're using?
Okay. I go into my interface. The interface goes to the one control, and then it goes through 10 loops in this order. Love pedal octave, which is an octave up like an Octavia. But it's a little cleaner. It has no knobs on it or anything.
Yeah,
if you'll see.
It's not.
It's kind of like a Green Ringer. You can. It's a little cleaner than an Octavia. You can chord with it. It tracks better, and then I can combine it with other dirts to get the Octavia.
Can you play a little bit as you go through? Just show everybody what.
Sure.
Okay, that's him straight.
So that's nothing. The Octavia, actually, I took the battery out today at a session, so it's not in there.
Okay.
Because that's another interesting thing that I have is this battery box on my pedal board. Why would I have batteries? But that's another whole other story. So then it goes from there to loop two, which has a Chula, which is a dirt pedal, which is my main dirt pedal. It's a really organic, simple dirt pedal. Loop three goes to a fuzz. Loop four goes to my extra loop that's off the board, the wah mm-hmm. loop. So that gives me my wah after the first dirt pedal, but before the fuzz. So because I like to have fuzz after the wah-wah pedal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's loop four. Loop five goes to my Phase 45. Loop six goes to the Caitlin Bread Echo Rec pedal, which is a really great... version of the old Benson Echo mm-hmm. Rec.
Yeah.
And that's another interesting personal choice that I made. After loop six, where that echo is, I have another dirt pedal, the Dirty Little Secret, which is like a Marshall-y type super bass, mild Marshall pedal. And I do it that way to simulate the sound of a tape echo in front of a Marshall pedal. So
can
a lot
you
of people don't
try,
do that.
Try that.
I think I took the battery out of that. I did. I apologize. I was messing. I had a session today, and I was changing around things and messing with my batteries. But so that's a dirt in front of, I mean, an echo in front of a dirt for an odd reason.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have my trem pedal, which is actually the Josh Smith dual trem, which is made by Rocket. And then from there, it goes to the Eventide H9, which is actually in two loops of the one control, one for left and one for right. And then from there, it comes out in stereo back to my interface, which splits to my two amp outs.
So you're always going, you're mono all the way to the Eventide, and then you're out stereo.
Mono to the Eventide, and then stereo out. And the cool thing about my interface box is it sums. So if I only plug into one amp, like right now, and I turn on the Eventide, I'll get both sides going to one amp. And then if I plug into both, it knows to split. And it splits left to one and right.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. And then now you were talking about you use batteries or do you use the power supply?
I use both. I have the Voodoo Lab pedal power 4x4 to power almost the whole board, the one control, the H9, most of the pedals. But then for dirts only, I prefer to use carbon batteries, which are the really crappy dollar store batteries, not alkaline. They just sound better and they last a year. And they just feel and sound in a way. I know it sounds crazy, but I've always felt that way. So Mason built me this battery box, which is another interesting story. I have the original battery box that Bradshaw built me about 15 years ago in my rack. Mm-hmm. And then Mike Landau saw it, and he was like, I have to have one of these. And he couldn't. Bradshaw said he would never build one again. It was a hassle. So finally, he talked Mason into building
so
this.
So the battery box has a bunch of batteries in
yeah,
it?
Yeah, check it out. I'll lean down.
It's got a thumb screw, and when you open it up...
It'll default to the power supply if they go out, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So four of them have little battery clips in there. Those are those cheap GI batteries. And when it's tapped off of one of the taps from the 4x4. So when I plug in my main power cable to the pedal board, to the 4x4, it knows to turn on the battery supply. So I don't have to turn off the battery pedals. I don't have to unplug the input jack on the battery pedals, nothing. If I unplug the power supply, it kills all the power. The second I plug it in, it turns the batteries on.
That's really cool. A lot easier than keep up opening all those pedals. Because that would be a chore, sitting there going back and load all those pedals.
Oh, the next thing I'm building is a pedal board that's this big with nothing but 3-4 dirt pedals in that. So I have no power supply, but I can still change batteries super simple.
Yeah, he's talking about a foot in width. He's talking about for... He's using his hands. You can't see it on radio.
One that I can put under my clothes in my suitcase.
That is really cool. So Bradshaw, he originally built one of those.
Bradshaw built this original one. That it wasn't all sharp like that. It was the batteries were exposed with clips on the top of a little box that had a switch, and I had to turn it off and on every time. I couldn't forget. Otherwise, my batteries would run down in between gigs. So Mason kind of has taken it to the next level.
That's custom built, or does somebody make one of those?
No, it's custom built. The guy who built my pedal board and designed this whole thing is a company called Vertex Effects, and he built the battery box.
That's a cool little thing to have, just have like a little battery power supply thing like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Now, let's take a look at, can you go through your pedal board, Ron, and describe a little bit what you're using?
It's really simple. You know, it's simply the first loop I have, the way huge pork line for more of a harmonic distortion. It's not really as supposed to be used for distortion per se. I just like a little bit of dirt in there. I think the second loop is the MXR compressor.
Which is the same one that Billy Sheehan uses.
And then I've gotten on loop three, the envelope filter, also an MXR. And then on four, I have the OC2 and the POG in the same loop with the little one control blender in between those so that I can blend between those two pedals. And, you know, when a lot of guys talk about a buffer or some type of a pedal like that, you always want to consider the audio factor of it, because there are other products out there that do similar things, but they might not sound as clean or pure. So you really have to try and listen to things to see if it's really replicating what you had prior to you turning that box on.
Yeah.
So, and then the last one, I have my chorus in the last loop in five for the MXR chorus. And then at the top, I have a DI so that if I come out of the board, right, and into the input of the DI or the input portion of that, the parallel out to the amplifier, and then the guy can just come in, plug the DI in, and he'll hear everything through the house or in the studio.
Yeah, no, it's interesting what you're saying, because I have a GNL bass, and the output of that bass, you never needed a buffer. I actually was driving line level when we record directly in the console. That's how hot that pickup was.
Yeah.
And basses in general tend to have more output anyway than guitar, but it sounds like you don't really need it as much. But your systems, again, there's not a lot of... there's different channels, so you have a lot of complexity in terms of switching around. But when you look at each channel, it's just maybe two or three.
Right, one or the other, or both, you know, just manually. But past that, that's it.
Well, the other thing about that, about losing signal with that, is with everything in the loop, even if you turn every loop on and you're going through every foot of cable on there, you're also going through active pedals, which are buffering your signal anyways. Nobody's going to turn on every loop and have all the pedals off so that you're going through every pedal continuously with the pedals off and all the cabling and the true bypasses.
Are these active? Because I thought like my old fuzz face was passive.
Oh, no, I just mean engaged pedals, turned on. Okay. So when they're turned on, you don't need the buffer anyways. The signal's getting pushed through, I mean, by the effect.
Yeah, you know? Some of them do. I remember I have an MXR phaser, and that phaser had a buffer. It was louder.
Right.
You couldn't adjust it. You couldn't adjust that level, but it did definitely get louder.
Right.
But, do you guys have a favorite buffer?
That also depends on the application, I find, because, like I said, we tried a bunch with these. There's a buffer that I used to use when I was a kid. It was one of the first standalone things you could buy. It was a big deal. Steve Rayett had the VHT valvulator, the tube buffer that everybody started buying and putting on their pedal board. And I plugged it in, and I was like, man, I can't get this to work. Everything's so bright now. It's like brittle and bright, and I'm 100 times louder. And then I didn't realize it was because I was losing so much signal on my pedal board.
Yeah, well, that's why it compensated for that.
Exactly. But it was too much. You know what I mean? At least in my head as a 15-year-old, it was too much. You know? But and everybody hears things so differently. You know what I mean? The buffer in the One Control is a great sounding buffer. And you know, there's no reason I'm not using it other than that I don't like input buffers, really. Because I want the signal coming from the guitar to not change at all, really, until it gets to the end.
Especially a guitar that sounds as good as...
Well, that's why I don't use compressors, too, on a personal level. I want all the dynamics to be done with my hands and with the sound, the choices I make, and how hard I hit the strings and how I set my volume and all that. So that's just a personal thing.
Yeah, the buffer you shouldn't actually hear anything at all. It sounds good that the fact that it didn't change anything at all.
Yeah, it's the same thing with high end cables. You know, the first time I tried a Monster cable, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. It's so much louder than my old cable. I must have really had the worst cables ever. And then I start realizing, no, wait a minute, this is really bright. Something's not right here, you know? And that's why some guys like that, and some guys like cheap cables. And some guys like Mogami because they're really, really flat and neutral, and you don't hear anything. You know?
Well, I remember a friend of mine said, let's rewire your... I have an old Cream Bandmaster 64 around there, and we put Monster cable in the cabin, and I didn't like the sound of it at all. Yeah. The old cable, it did roll off the highs, but it gave that sound.
Yeah,
so, absolutely. No, I can understand that. That does make sense. Let me ask you then, let's go to Terry for a minute. I want to go through some of these pedals that One Control makes and talk a little bit about them. Now, the one that that's on Josh's pedal board, it has a buffered output if you wanted it.
Well, kind of buffered in and out, basically. You have to go in and then out of it. Yes, it does.
Can you kind of just go through it a little?
Sure, I can. I mean, it's a pretty, you know, it... Sorry, I just banged into a microphone. If you look at the unit, you know, people can get overwhelmed, especially when you look at the back and you see all the inputs. But really, it's just a repetition of the same thing. You know, there's, you know, 7 loops that can dedicate it, go to the front end of the amp, and then there's optional 3 more loops that you can also go to the front end of the amp, but you could actually send 3 pedals to your back end of your amp, to the effects loop, where, you know, arguably a reverb and a tremolo or vibrato just sound just sweeter in the effects loop. But then again, that is also a matter of taste.
Right.
So what this thing does is it makes it very easy to program. That is, I think, the biggest feature of it. There's no storing anything. You just push the, you know, there's 10 corresponding push buttons on this unit that correspond with the 10 loops that you have. And in order to program it, you just push one of those buttons and it's programmed. It's stored instantly. You can take the power out, put it back in, and it's still there. Mm-hmm. So it's very simple to program. Now, connecting it might be a little bit more of a problem because you need to first make a whole bunch of cable or buy a whole bunch of cable. But then once that is done, you know, and it's all hooked up, it's pretty easy. You got MIDI in and out, so you can actually have this thing do MIDI switching. So let's say you're in a Justin Timberlake's band or whatever. It might be that the musical director is... Oh, actually, that's a bass player, I think, with Justin Timberlake. But, you know, some keyboard player might actually trigger all the changes for you. It's sending program changes. So this thing can do that. It can receive program changes and will change to whatever loop that needs to be for that section of the song, even for that second in a song. It doesn't matter. It can be taken care of that way. Or alternatively, which it is primarily used as, is a MIDI out. So you can send program change signals to, for instance, the Eventide H9 and make it go to a specific preset when you want it programmed under a particular button.
Now, when it saves a preset in there, is there a battery in there? Or does it...
You know what? I've opened up a few of these, and...
How does it hold...
There might be a tiny little battery in there, and I haven't spotted it, but I was also not looking for it. But there must be a little, you know, pin battery. But there's not a lot to remember. You know, the storing is... You need to do a lot. And it might be charged even nowadays through the input jack. I have no idea.
Now, it seems, I'm looking at it across the table. There's a, it looks like a network-type cable. And you were talking about how you can slave these?
Yes. That's not one more feature I forgot to talk about. So it has a sync or a link out. It looks like a, what do you call those cables?
Cat5 or something?
Yeah.
Ethernet
cable. That's what I want to say. It's actually wired a little bit different.
But you can use a standard cable, right?
Well, you can, but you have to reassign the pins. You have to literally put the tip on yourself, the plasticky, you know, injector jacky thingy.
Okay.
I'm so technical. And so, but what you can do is you can actually have two of these side by side, and now you have 20 loops that you can program and have run off. Or you can, you know, people that play on large stages oftentimes don't want their nice vintage boutique collection of pedals to be on the stage where some fan is going to throw a bottle of water or something up the stage and fry your product. So what you can do is you can have this just the one control OC10 crocodile tail loop sitting up front on the stage, have the other one in the back in the rack, and you can just link up to it, and you can have this one actually use it as a remote control for your effects that are backstage. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're a super rock star, you can have your tech switch to something because you're out in front of a million people.
Right.
And you can't get back to the button in time.
Yeah, exactly. So you can do too.
What I thought was really cool, and we were talking about this before the show, and one of the things working with different setups, like my pedal board right now has like all the processors, like a flange or phaser, that kind of stuff. But I like usually I go into an amp and crank the amp up. Mm-hmm. But in certain sessions where you want distortion more controlled, it'd be nice to have like a satellite pedal board with all the distortion units.
Sure.
And then you can connect these guys together and you can expand your board as needed, which I think
use it as a modular system. But, you know, if you have 10 pedals and then you need 20 pedals for, you know, both of them are not very modular. 20 pedals is a lot and 10 is... Yeah, you know, it's pretty substantial boards too in general, but yeah, I get you can use it any way which way you want. It's really up to you.
Right.
How did it
now
use
that
it?
one doesn't power the pedals. That's just
no.
That's
it.
Now you have another one here that I see little.
Like, right. So one control what we've done with one control pedals is for the longest time they started sending power through. So they have a little loop switcher called the black loop, and it's basically just, you know, two loops in one. And so this one can actually distribute power as well. So let's say you have a 4x4, which basically has four times two outputs, so that you can only power eight off there. But if you have a ninth one, you could just go into the black loop and have that come off of there as well and just split this, the power up. Mm-hmm. So they've done that in that pedal, and they did that also in other switchers. You know, we've got a three-loop switcher called the Xena Gamma tail loop, and then there is also the Iguana tail loop, which is the five-loop switcher that Ron has on his board, and then there's the Camellio tail loop Mark II. There used to be a four-loop switcher. Now it's a five-loop switcher with three different banks. Used to be just four. You could store four presets, and that's it. This one, we can basically store 15 presets on it.
And that one has power.
Has power distribution as well. So that's why I mentioned that one in that order. So that one can actually power, and you can power five pedals plus your tuner off the one unit. So you could technically, if you only had five pedals and a tuner, you just buy a power supply, throw it in there, and it powers the entire board.
Mm-hmm. That'll switch actually your channel on your amplifier too. If you're doing channel switching, it'll do it from the looper as well.
Yeah, so that you can do that technically also with all the switches. You can use them also as channel switchers if you wanted to. Even the crocodile tail loop. If you want to program channel switching, no problem.
Right.
You're
going
to lose you're going to lose loops for it because you're going to sacrifice one of the loops.
But you could use that one there. I don't remember the name of it, but that one you could use as your switcher and use the other one for your. They're very small. I mean, I have on my pedal a Carl Martin switcher, and it takes a lot of real estate. That thing's like half the size, and the other one's even smaller. And the one that Ron has on his pedal board, as you'll see on the pictures we'll post, they're really great. They're very economical for the pedal board, so they don't eat up a lot of space.
Yeah. And they're super reliable so far. I mean, I've sold a lot of these units here in the U.S., and you know, I think it's like 365 that we've sold so far in the last 2 years, and we've only had 9 defective units, and they were really silly defects too. It's like a loose washer, you know, nut. I mean,
and these one control, they're available at Sweetwater, right?
Yeah, Sweetwater is actually my largest dealer for those.
So now, what are these other little guys that you have? There's a bunch of little.
This is actually kind of the latest stuff. One control started with the Mesquite blender. That was the whole idea. So they have a little blend pedal that Ron also has on his board. Where you basically, there's so many pedals that make so much noise, you know, that you don't want them all the way in there. You know, those old vintage pedals and stuff. So you can blend. There's actually, you can go a little bit of that signal or all of the signal. Or there's, you know, as a bass player, Ron will know this, a lot of pedals don't have a, you know, they suck up all your natural tone is gone, and you just hear the affected tone. So this will, so on some fancy pedals, there will be a blend already, you know, input, so, you know, clean and dirt. And the Mesquite Blender kind of fills that gap for those pedals that don't have that. For instance, my fuzz goes into that, and so I can blend the fuzz, because you lose a lot of fundamental a lot with a fuzz on bass.
So you're blending your clean sound with the fuzz in that sense.
Exactly, yeah. So that I still have the low end that is true from the bass, and then just the mid-range and the becomes all fuzzy.
That's kind of what Billy Sheehan does. He uses the same type of
thing. Right, otherwise
He does it from his bass. He has two outputs from his bass.
Right. So then they,
that's,
you know,
cool.
So that was one of the products. And then the other next product they did was the Micro Distro, was just a tiny little, actually at that point, and probably still is, the smallest power supply for a pedal board. It's not isolated outputs, what people, you know, talk about. And isolated, that's another conversation, by the way, we could have isolated outputs on a power supply. And yeah, it's really small. It's actually the size, for those that are listening and not watching, well, nobody's watching. is that it's about the size of one of those little mini pedals that you nowadays see. And it has, you know, eight outs and one variable out. You can link them together. You know, I have two of those on my board because I actually have
more. That is really cool. And that's just, that'll power that many little pedals.
Yes, up to 2,000 milliamps. So that's enough for any board.
That's
really
huge.
Unless you put like a two Strymon timelines on there or whatever, then you start getting into trouble. But otherwise, no problem. Besides, you don't. That's the conversation when it comes to, isolated outputs versus, you know, non-isolated outputs. If you have an isolated output, it's great. If you have digital pedals, if you have non-digital pedals, it really doesn't matter. You won't get any dirt that is transmitted. And that is so. If you have a digital pedal on there, then by all means,
his power supply is like four times the size of that. What's the main difference?
Because it's got eight individual transformers for every single output to isolate the signal so that you don't have interference from the so what happens with a digital pedal, it will shoot out digital information through the power line into non-digital pedals, and you will hear that, and it becomes very annoying and very unpleasant. It's like it's
so if you're using digital pedals, you want the isolation, right?
you will want to isolate it, and then you can do that obviously by having an isolated power supply. But if you have one digital pedal, why not just use one separate power supply, you know?
And
it would save you a lot of money.
So like if you're using a bunch of fuzz pedals and stuff like that, that thing would be the, and it's way smaller. I mean,
on his board is only one digital pedal. Right?
Well, technically, yeah.
The Eventide, right?
That's right. The reason I have the 4x4, the Eventide has a large draw. And I want it to be dedicated. And also I needed to power, it's powering everything. It's powering the one control itself as well. And nine other pedals.
But now your battery supply thing that you have on there, that's basically sending one battery, one pedal. So you're isolated there too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not sharing. So that's cool.
Right, yep. So, and then what else do they do? They do, so the black loop we just talked about is just two dedicated loops, pedal one, pedal two, or loop one, could be three pedals and one pedal, whatever you want to do. And that's just to switch between them or have them both on at the same time. Alternatively, they have the white loop, which looks almost the same, except it's a different color, but it's actually what they call a flash loop. And this thing, what it allows you to do is have two pedals hooked up, but with one push of the button, you go from one to the other. Which for me is as a bass player.
Can you use that and flip it and use it like an amp selector?
If you,
would it work both ways?
I don't know. I haven't tried that. I know you can do the black loop as an amp selector, but I'm not. Okay. I haven't tried that on this one.
Okay, you got me. Yeah, that would
now, now you got. Now you got me interested in trying that out when I get back.
Let us know. Let me know. I'll post it on the site.
But most importantly, it does. You know, if you have a situation where you have to turn on two pedals down at the same time, or actually turn two off at the same time, and you have to do it within a microsecond, this is the way to do it. Just click.
Oh wow!
Bomb,
so you
click,
could like bomb. You can hit like stereo fuzz.
Yeah, whatever you
know,
want
for
to
two
do.
Channels. That's cool. That is really
so
cool.
That is that's the white loop. Then they make some other utilitary pedals like the junction box. It just gives you kind of what he's got on his pedal board. You know, you plug in here, and then all the pedals are collected. So you have your cords running on one side of your pedal board instead of having one coming in here on the left side and coming out from the right side or vice versa. So that is that's what that pedal does.
Okay. Now we're already out of time, and I told the guys this goes so fast, and we just scratched the surface. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that, and which means you guys have to come back. So I really hope that we can get you back in here to talk more about this. Before we go, I want each guy to go through separately. Give us your website. Give us what you're doing. I know, Ron, you're going to be doing some seminars. Let us know about that, where they're going to be at, the stores that you're going to be at. And then also, Josh, your new album, where you're going to be playing. Let me start with Terry.
Sure.
Let's go right across.
All right. So my company is a Stage Tricks Products. Besides all the One Control stuff that we distribute, not manufacture. Our sponsor, Sweetwater, had that wrong. I manufacture Stage Tricks products here, and that we do hook and loop fasteners that don't come off. And,
yeah, but if you're building a pedal board, they got the cool stuff.
And we got the wah fastener, and we have the setting saver marker, and the pedal risers that allow you to raise, you know, pedals in the back row, and offer cable routing solutions. So that's Stage Tricks, and then Stage Tricks distributes also One Control products. And you can find more about Stage Tricks at www.stagetricksproducts.com. Stage Tricks is actually spelled StageTrixProducts.com.
Yes.
And you can also go to www.one-control.com, which is the U.S. website for One Control. And that's where you're going to get me.
Ron?
Let's see what we have coming up. July 28th, we'll do a pedalboard clinic at the Guitar Trader of San Diego. It's, I think, at 12:30 we're going to have it there. If you're local to L.A. and you're looking for One Control, the Amp Shop here in the Valley has all of the One Control stuff, and they offer pedal board advice, and they also put stuff together for you. And let's see, Huntington Beach, Neil's Music, if you're an Orange County guy, and, of course, we'll be in San Diego next Saturday.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
And then also, too, Ron will be keeping me posted. If he's when he's going to have other seminars, we'll post them up on our site so you guys can check that out. But and then also, too, at Sweetwater, check with your Sweetwater representative and ask him about the One Control stuff. You know, they'll talk to you more about that.
The beauty is you'll be able to go and see all this stuff when you go to the pedalboard clinic.
Yeah,
and, you know, you'll get a visual of it. So
yeah, and your site is merinosales.com.
Right.
So check that out, and if you have any questions, you can contact them via that. Josh.
All right, my website is Josh Smith Guitar. I don't think I have to spell that one out. So joshsmithguitar.com. I have a bunch of CDs out, instrumental guitar ones, and then other ones where I sing and all that. I go to Europe a lot. I'll be over there in November, and then a bunch next year. I have a new record coming out next year that I just finished. And here in town, I mostly do sessions, and I tour with a lot of different other pop artists. But starting July 6th, I'm going to start a new weekly thing when I'm not on the road at the Brig in Venice. And every week I'm going to have a different guest with me. So July 6th is me and my best friend Kirk Fletcher. But then the next week Scott Henderson is going to be playing with me all night. Okay. Landau will do one. I'm dragging every friend out to come play. So that's at the Brig in Venice on Sunday night.
Let us know, and I'll post that on the site so our friends in LA can go and check it out.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Well, thank you, guys. It's just been amazing, and it's been a real education for me. Josh, if it's okay, why don't you take us out, play a little ditty
sure,
for us?
Sure.
And also, too, just real quick, tell him about this guitar that he uses. This is a beautiful little guitar.
This is a guitar built by Bill Chapin in Portland, Oregon. He calls it a T-Bird. It's a Tele-style guitar. And it's a 50s-style ash body maple neck.
It's a beautiful guitar. Everybody, thank you so much. We'll see you next week. Have a great week. And take care.